Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to film sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available as a podcast, and it's also available in some configuration of iTunes, whatever they have labeled that now. Joining me in studio, yes, WFYI crossover madness is happening here at the station. He's the man. He's one of the other voices named Matt. He sits next to me at work, and he's got a brand new show called All In, capital I, capital N.
Get it?
Matt Pelser is in studio with me. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Matt Soucy. Thank you so much. There's too many Matts in the building, but
we have one more. We can talk Detroit sports, which is great for indie radio.
Any number of commentary from Matts, any number of subjects.
So at the time we're recording, you've already the show has already started.
It has
taken the place of the No Limits slot, and then it will go into 5 days a week, right?
Yeah, by this fall we should be 5 days a week, live, and perhaps statewide too.
Okay, so see, tune in on that. So I guess for folks that are regular WFYI listeners, tell us what the difference between All In and No Limits. How's that transition been going for this program?
There's not going to be a huge difference, really. Just the difference is me as the host versus John Kroll. John did a great job. He's got such a journalistic intuition. You know what I mean? He's
yep.
the director of the Pulliam School of Journalism at Franklin College and director of the StatehouseFile.com. And he just brought such a resume of journalism to that role. Me, I'm sort of a fresh journalist with a lot of journalist friends to kind of fall back on for the kind of perspective. But I'm a radio veteran.
I'll say it for him. Snitches.
Yeah.
That's a technical term.
It's very important for journalists to kind of snitch on other journalists if they don't get it right.
Well, we call them reliable sources. So anyway, the show is happening Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock, and then it will eventually turn into 5 days a week at the, if I remember right, I believe at the same time slot?
Same time slot,
yeah. Same time slot.
We're expecting to stay at 1 p.m., and we've got a number of affiliates signed on, public radio stations throughout Indiana who are planning on taking us. And so we're going to be talking about issues that affect Indiana.
And this reminds me, for those of us who are on the eastern part of the state, there's a show called Cincinnati Edition, which is also a daily local news program, and of course can go into state, can go into nationals from a local standpoint. So
is that WVXU?
Yes, it is.
It is. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. My dad's a member of WVXU, and that's actually the station that got me interested in public radio as a child.
Is your dad a member here?
No, actually, because he lives near Cincinnati. So
fair enough.
He contributes to his local public radio station.
And I bet Thanksgivings are real fun.
yeah, I could probe him on that, perhaps.
But that's where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up near Cincinnati, southeastern Indiana, actually. I'm a lifelong Hoosier. My parents were from Brookville. I was actually born in Cincinnati. But
I was born in Michigan. That makes no difference to me.
Yeah, at the age of 6 months, they moved to southeastern Indiana from sort of the Cincinnati suburbs, and I've lived there ever since.
So if you have to check his birth certificate, there it is. Yes, Brookville. Oh, by the way, hi, McKenna. You're down there as well. So, it's all connected. So anyway, as we've been saying over the years here at the station, while a lot of news divisions have been downsized and shrinking, we are growing and growing, and this is another example of that.
And we have been for a few years now. I mean, just before I got here, they started the initiative to start building the newsroom. And they have, since I got here 3 years ago, they've probably tripled, maybe even quadrupled in size. So many reporters running around doing their thing, which is just great when you see, like you said, newsrooms shrinking across the country. Ours is really growing. And a lot of that, of course, is due to philanthropic support and grants, all from very smart people who say that local news is important.
From people like you.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, it's not that time yet, but we'll get there. All right, let's address the title elephant in the room. When did FYI announce they're all in, and when did Wish announce they're all in? Ugh. And when are we having – I've been trying to come up with a Goodwill ambassador charity event, like a softball match or Twister or beer chugging Thunderdome, something like that.
If it's Twister or beer chugging, I will win. If it's softball, we won't even show up.
So what's the timeline on that?
So we announced, first of all, we had one name picked out. We won't mention it just because we found out that another show in town was using that name.
Okay.
So we had one name picked out.
It was Indie Style. No.
It was Indie Style, yeah. Damn you, Wish. You got us twice. No. So we had one name picked out, but we didn't cross-check the trademark. So we had to abandon that one. And so then we decided on All In, and then we announced that. We made it public at the end of June, actually, or toward the end. It wasn't quite at the end. And so then we heard, I believe it was on Monday, July the 1st or 2nd or whenever that was, that Wish TV was also doing a show called All In. And so we were freaking out a little bit, but we had already gotten the trademark for it and all this. So we knew we were in the right. But we're not really in the business of fighting anyone on anything. We're lovers, not fighters at public radio.
Don't you
think that?
Well, as somebody who has appeared on Indie Style from time to time and other stations, we've cross-pollinated everything from Abdul's show, that other place and that other station. Yeah, we're all right.
And not to mention, they're like our next door neighbors.
Literally.
So we don't want to get into a Hatfield-McCoy situation here.
No, and especially Tracy Forner, because he's the tallest of the Hatfields. So, hi, guys. No, I understand. But actually, I am going to kind of put out an invite if they want to come on the show and talk about stuff as well.
And likewise,
I think at the very least I mentioned, and this happened with the Richmond Shakespeare Festival in Indiana, somewhere on the website, just have a link to the Richmond, Virginia Shakespeare Festival. And I think probably a link to All In from Wish would help.
For confused Googlers.
Right, exactly. And they're out there. So that's not Matt.
Yeah.
He's not nearly that good looking.
So we're a radio show, and they're a TV show, and we're really doing two different things.
Yeah.
We just happen to have the same title. And really, our official position on it is, look, they just have good taste. They have good taste. And look, if they want to do a show called All In, we do a show called All In, and they want the inconvenience of telling people that they're the TV show, and we then have the inconvenience of saying that we're the radio show and not the TV show, then that's fine. I don't know where they are in it, but we're sticking to the name. And if they want to stick to the name too, we're fine with that.
So, and if anybody from Wish is listening, they're more than welcome to come and hang out at Film Sociology. It's
sure.
Always, we have a fun time. But yeah, we'll come up with a charity car wash or something like that for both shows. That'll be fun. And I'm glad we've talked for a long time about doing the show, especially now because family dad guy and two new shows. So you're going to be watching less films than you already have been.
This is a perfectly good excuse to get this done now before it's impossible.
Well, and it's okay. I've had guests on the show. I remember one actor friend who had a new child, and he said he'd been watching nothing but Kung Fu Panda for 6 months.
Well, so there are worse things.
There are far worse things out there. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I do want there's a couple of events I do want to mention that are coming up. Indie Shorts, as a part of the International Film Festival, is happening at Newfields July 25th through the 28th. So a chance to see a myriad of short films. So you can go to heartlandfilm.org for all the times and all the information. And, of course, they have the summer movie series going outside at Newfields, which I think this weekend is going to be very hot. You know, consider yourself warned on that aspect. In my ongoing attempt to dodge remakes and sequels, because I've already been disappointed a couple of times, and also the fact that one of the films I wanted to talk about this week got pushed to a TBA time, so I really hope it gets in there. However, I found one of the funnier films to come out this year. I was very, very excited to see this. I was intrigued by it and then saw it and really enjoyed it. And it's a film called The Art of Self-Defense.
Ah, yes.
With Jesse Eisenberg. And it's a man who's attacked at random by some motorcycle thugs on the street. And he goes into a karate studio and becomes obsessed not only about defending himself, but also with his sensei. And looking at this, it's written and directed by Riley Stearns, who's only done a handful of shorts and then one other feature. But if you watch the first 20 minutes of this, I mean, Eisenberg, who has evolved over the years as an actor, it looks like something he would have played 10 years ago, the kind of nebbish, awkward office guy. And then as the film goes on and he becomes more and more obsessed with his martial art and his defense and taking on the world. It's like, okay, so this is the stuff that we've been seeing since Social Network and Lex Luthor and all that stuff. So it is a really fun, not for everybody, it's a fun dark look at a twist on the toxic masculinity world.
Do you think that he would have done a movie like this, like you said, 10 years ago, or do you think that it's okay now for him to sort of play into his typecasting?
I think there's a little bit. I think he could have done this 10 years ago, but I also think
because it seems like if he would have done it, that would have just further typecasted him to other things.
Probably, because he's done some dark stuff before, like American Ultra, which kind of made fun of his image, and Zombieland to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But this one was I didn't know it was going to be this dark. And there are elements of Fight Club, which I think, you know, is one of the best recent of this century of toxic masculinity. Well, it was 99, but you get the idea. The Foot Fist Way is Danny McBride. It's a Danny McBride film from that not enough people have seen, in my opinion, but
it
also
made
makes fun of
his
that.
Career.
Yeah, it did.
It really came at a pivotal time in his
it
career.
It did. And the Rex Kwandosi segment of Napoleon Dynamite is another kind of example of that. So Imogene Poots is also in this as a fellow student. And Alessandro Nivola, this is that guy. This is one of those that guys I'm learning is he's very, very good as the sensei, because there is the stuff you're supposed to teach as far as discipline, and then it just gets to be too ruthless. He's forced to listen to Eisenberg's character is forced to listen to metal and get rid of his little Dachshund and get a German Shepherd. You know, he has to get more instead of French. He winds up learning German and Russian. I mean, it's yeah. And it's that fine line between finding a place of community and cult, which, you know, is I wouldn't watch the art of self-defense with Midsommar. Is far, that's not a good double feature by any means of the imagination.
No, it's a little bit too much of an odd juxtaposition.
A little bit odd juxtaposition. But I do want to mention Alessandro Nivola for a little bit. I mentioned that guy. So going through and we go through this where you see somebody's work, and he's very good in this, because here's a man, and of course there's been comparisons to the bad guy sensei from the Karate Kid, you know, if he were in Fight Club kind of level. You know, the fact that he, you know, he worships a fallen leader on his frame, you know, and is framed on the wall, the Grandmaster, not that Grandmaster Flash, but the fact that, you know, he keeps this place as a serious temple, but it's surrounded with nothing but wood paneling. You know, it's the respect aspect, but it's like very kind of on the cheap. And as the, especially in the last third, it goes down a particularly dark path, which you sort of see coming, but the brutality of it. And I'm a dark comedy guy, so I really enjoyed this look at toxic masculinity. Anytime you can poke that little balloon, I'm good with that. So looking back on Alessandro Nivola, the earliest thing I saw him, he was Pollock's Troy in Face Off.
Really?
Right, that guy. So you recognize that guy, and then hopefully you commit his name to memory.
You still have the glasses?
No, this is well, he's older now in this one, but he appeared in stuff like Mansfield Park. He was in Kenneth Branagh's Love's Labor's Lost. He was in Jurassic Park 3, The Clearing, The Sisters, both Goal films, Howl, Most Violent Year, which I really liked. He was Anthony Amato in American Hustle. He was in Selma. Disobedience, which I really, really liked from last year. He played the Hasidic spouse in that film. And in this one, so just enough menace and veracity with this guy.
He is good at that. You can feel it when he does it.
So I went a few days. I saw it a couple of days ago, and I went online and asked, what were your favorite films that poke fun at toxic masculinity? So let's see. I'm hot scrolling here at WFYI and Films. Okay, so some of the titles include from my listeners. Scott Pilgrim versus the World, sure.
Yeah.
Roadhouse.
Okay.
Thank you, Cassie. Leo said Scott Pilgrim. Sam Watermeyer, who's been a guest on the show, In the Company of Men and American Psycho. Very good. Channing King wrote Fight Club. My buddy Denise wrote Caddyshack.
You know,
sure.
I'll take it.
Lou Harry, George of the Jungle. Guy from Chicago says pretty much any porn film ever made. Moving on. Jonathan says The Adventurers of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Okay. Blazing Saddles, Rick says that. Evan Dossie mentions The Foot Fist Way. Marty from Indy writes The Producers. John writes Magnolia. Eric Studeville, who is, yes, married to our Stacey Studeville, wrote Deliverance.
Ah.
Jeffrey Freeman wrote Black Dynamite. My favorite, however, this actually happened. I went on Twitter and hashtagged the film and asked, what is your favorite film about that pokes fun at masculinity? And their response to me was those home movies of you growing up.
Wow.
So thank you to at Self Defense Film for answering my question. That was awesome. So anyway, it's something out of the ordinary. And if you like making fun of, you know, very intense people. That's the film for you.
There's really no shortage of that. And really, I think that there should be more.
Yes. And by the way, since that title was brought up, I am the one responsible for you watching Deliverance finally.
Well,
after the death of Burt Reynolds.
I still haven't.
You still haven't?
I still haven't. I didn't get a chance to.
Oh, dear.
I didn't get a chance to find it. Were you planning on talking about that this whole time?
No, I was just going to bring it up. So
okay.
Because I know I've had you borrow stuff in the past. So
yeah, but
okay.
I didn't get it from you, and I couldn't find it. And so, yeah, I just...
Well, that's all right. Well, the kid's got to fall asleep sometime. So
well, and the wife has to be okay with it.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a little bit.
Let's get into it.
So you have one child and number two is on the way.
By the time you listen to this, he may already be here.
Wow.
It's that close. 9.5 months pregnant.
Not 9.5 weeks.
No.
All right. So I will ask, do you remember your first date film with your lovely?
Ooh, goodness.
Boy, now it's a newlywed game.
You know what it was? It was the, it was a documentary.
Wow, that's sexy.
Right? Well, it was the Sound City documentary. that Dave Grohl did on Sound City Studios.
Which
is kind of sexy because it's, you know, it's rock music and it's rock history and that kind of thing.
You know, Echo from the Canyon is still playing in theaters right now.
Oh, my gosh. I have to see that one.
Yeah, you'll have to see. I have, as I mentioned on the show last week, I'm good with music documentaries. I don't need any more feature films based on my record collection.
You know what is a great one, though? And I know you've seen it. You had to have. It won a freaking Oscar. Was 20 Feet from Stardom, which I just recently saw.
That's a lovely. You know, anytime you can get session players to tell their story, I'm all for it.
I just saw that, and I wish I had watched it years ago. And what I love about music documentaries is all of the, for lack of a better term, studio porn. Because I am such a
wait,
freak.
Wait. For those who, to clarify, you're talking about the footage of the recording studios, not the actions happening in the recording studios. I want to note that was Matt Pelser, not Matthew Sosi, saying this. I eagerly await your calls.
And again, for lack of a better term, that was what came to mind, and that was what I had to stick with.
Studio porn.
Man, anytime I see a vintage microphone, I just cannot. Like, I'll pause it. You know what I mean? I'll pause it and identify it for everyone in the room who did not want to know.
I managed a band in college. You're the guys. We'd be at a concert and that's a 66 Les Paul. No, that's a 65. Yeah. Shut up.
No, there are more guitar guys where that's concerned than there are microphone guys, but I'm definitely a microphone guy and an outboard gear guy. I'll name a preamp or a vintage compressor. It's ridiculous.
This might be a Facebook extra if we go into a screening room with one of those films and you just pause it and tell us.
You know what?
Whatever brings the pledge bucks in.
Yeah, whatever it
engineers everywhere are throwing money in because you mentioned something from Laurel Canyon or from 20 Feet of Stardom.
He can identify a U-48 over a U-47. Amazing!
Oh, some of you love it, and you know who you are.
Engineers have more money than the average bear, so
that's true.
Maybe this is a market we need to tap.
That's possibly true. So welcome to brainstorming here at Film Sociology. We'll let Pam know. Okay, so, all right, first, boy, but she enjoyed it as well as the first date, Ocean City?
She did. We had a great time, and you know what it was? It was a pre-screening, so the room was full, and it was a bunch of other radio people. I worked at a different radio station at the time, and so we had a good time.
Cool.
Yeah,
very good. Okay, the last film you watched at home from start to finish, because you're a dad now.
Ooh, that's a good question. What was it? It was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
that's
we just decided to put it on the other night. I can't remember, was it my birthday? Because it was my birthday last week. She was like, well, what do you want to do? And I always want to watch a movie because I like to see a story unfold from start to finish rather than watching
nowadays.
Yeah, because nowadays everyone's binge watching TV, which takes hours, and I don't have hours. I have 2 hours. Okay. That's what I have.
Plus you have a kid and a half factor coming in.
Exactly. And so if you want to ask me what I want to do, the answer most likely is watch a movie.
World.
And so she was like, well, what do you want to watch? And I said, you know what? Honestly, I'd like to watch an Indiana Jones movie. And she said, okay, I'm cool with watching any of them. I'm like, well, you're no help. So she said, okay, I'll narrow it down to Raiders or Last Crusade. And even though Last Crusade, of all of them, is the one I've seen the least amount of times, including Crystal Skull, I've seen that one more than I've seen Last Crusade.
Oh, jeez.
I will fully admit it, and I will actually advocate for it. I really like that movie. But I said, you know what? Let's go Raiders, because that's the classic. That's the one everyone references. Let's do it.
All right.
So we did it, and it was great, and it's always a good time.
I tell the story with and now part of it is the film show and the criticism and everything, so I have a slightly larger agenda at home, but I remember when Emma was very little, and there was a on the DVD for Memento, there was a special feature that you had to answer a series of questions, a series of tests, ink blots, that sort of thing, and if you answered all the questions, you could watch Memento in chronological order. The problem was you couldn't stop it.
Oh,
couldn't pause it. Couldn't stop.
You couldn't even pause it?
No.
How do they even do that with a
technology.
DVD?
Well, you know, it was a lot. Mr. Nolan, I'm sure, was very stickler. Anyway, it took me 7 tries because, you know, Lynn would come down or Emma would come down. I think I was like 3/4 of the way through, and I said, Lynn, I'm really sorry. Can you please take care of her? I want to finish this. If I remember right, there's a couple DVDs that David Lynch put out and just put it on one single track. So you couldn't fast forward. You couldn't pause. You couldn't. So you just had to experience it as is.
He was such a stickler for that.
Right.
And he's Alan Smithied a lot of his movies because of that, right? Hasn't he?
Not necessarily. He just, you know, he will hopefully have his input on something. I know Blue Velvet is now out on Criterion, which I would like to check up. And by the way, I think we still have a little bit of time this month that there's a certain, well, Criterion's website as well as a certain bookstore chain is selling Criterion's for half off. So, you know, ooh, if you're into that sort of thing, that is out there. Okay, here's one we have talked about as dads because our desks are next to each other. What was the last film you were able to watch by yourself?
Ooh.
Because you should watch it by yourself. And by that tone, I don't mean porn or studio porn. I will give an example. There's been several in my household, but I remember there was one afternoon that Lynn had to take Emma to the doctor, and I watched both parts of Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac, parts 1 and 2. I don't recommend that on anybody, but I had to do it, and that was the only time I could watch it. So generally, something of probably a darker, something that you could watch without somebody in your family going, what are you watching?
What in the world? Oh, ooh, gosh, what a great question. The thing that comes to mind immediately, and I don't know if this is a good enough example.
It doesn't have to be something warped, but just something that, you know.
Interstellar.
Okay.
It was Interstellar. All right. That's a long movie.
It is.
And there are some people who just can't do a long movie. My wife is one of them. And by long, it's anything over 2 hours. Okay,
just
if it's a 90-minute comedy, she's in.
Okay.
If it's an hour and 45, she's iffy. If
201.
If it's 201, you can almost guarantee that she'll say, okay, what is it again? And then I'll have to explain it. I'll have to sell it, really.
Wow.
And then if I am successful in that, and if it's the right day and she's in the right mood, it's a maybe. So anytime that a movie is over 2 hours, much less well over 2 hours, near 3, like Interstellar, she's not in.
Okay.
So I was sick, actually, and I was like, you know what? She won't be home. It's
I'm
like
good.
Noon. I love this movie. I'm going to watch it. So it was Interstellar for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. And by the way, you can watch anything in the first year.
Yeah, yeah.
The kids haven't brought up. Emma hasn't yet to bring up The Wild Bunch. So that's pretty good.
And you know what I did when he was teeny tiny
and
I was by myself?
Oh, God.
I watched No Country for Old Men. And he was sitting right there. He was right there. He wasn't facing the TV, but he was right there.
Were you looking at him when the cattle gun first came out? Anton Chigurh, everyone's favorite babysitter.
Oh, my gosh. That movie is so messed up.
Yeah. Emma loves it.
Yeah, well, good. That's good because to like that movie means you've got a certain sort of perspective, and that's I can respect that from her.
Very good. So yeah, you'll get there. Also, and I know I give a lot of cinematic parental advice, or as I call it, pop culture Atticus Finch. Emma was 4 when I first took her to a movie. I'll say it. Dave Smiley of Smiley Morning Show I believe took his kid to a film last week. And I forget, it was like 2 or 3. And I thought, wow, that's even for me, that's a bit young. So, but I will say, be prepared to go. Be prepared that you're not going to get your money back.
Be prepared to leave.
Yep.
Just
absolutely.
Get out
just
the door.
Just have to get out the door.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know, though. My kid, we have watched one movie together.
And that was?
And that was The Emperor's New Groove.
Okay.
At home. So
right.
90-minute Disney movie,
sure.
You know, no big deal. But We kept him away from, we did the new thing where you keep him away from screens until they're two, and even then, before they're three, keep it very limited.
Sure, sure.
It was, I can't remember what it was. I think it was Father's Day weekend. My wife was like, what do you want to do with Finn? I said, honestly, I want to watch a movie. Can we watch a movie? And she's the stickler for this rule, you know what I mean? And she said, a movie? Like, can't we just, like, watch Sesame Street or something? I said, no, I want to watch a movie with my son, okay? Can we watch a movie?
Yes.
And then so we're looking and seeing what's available. And I said, how about The Emperor's New Groove? She loved it as a kid. She's 6.5 years younger than me. So she watched The Emperor's New Groove as a kid. Okay. And she said, okay, you got me. And so we watched it. And he sat stock still watching, paying attention,
cool.
providing some commentary like, he's a llama or he's jumping
right.
or that's water.
Well, and that's a thing, but that's all right.
And so, yeah, I really feel like, and maybe I'm speaking too soon, I feel like he would do well in the theater.
Our coworker Stacy told me this story, and it's a very valid one. I hadn't thought of it because I hadn't had this experience with her. But there will be certain films, and she used an example. The street chase scenes in Zootopia are really dark in a theater, but for her kids, it was okay in the safety of their living room. Just a little something like that, I guess, depending on the subject matter of that. I always have to give Mrs. Sosie credit, who had to be stuck out in the lobby with Cranky Emma as I was reviewing March of the Penguins. I gave it a shot. Well, animals. Thought that would be fine.
Yeah.
She'll like it. Morgan Freeman's soothing voice, and she was crabby, and so thank you, Lynn, about that. Do you remember the biggest cinematic argument you've had with your wife?
Oh, man. I think probably just me
the Emperor's
trying,
New Groove?
No, probably just me trying to convince her that we should watch a movie at any point in time, because she is one who will just, all she ever wants to do is put on Always Sunny in Philadelphia or The Office or Parks and Rec, you know, and just let that wash over her, you know what
okay.
I mean? Whereas I'm cool with Always Sunny and I'm cool with the others, but
sure.
It's just, I don't need something on. She's one of those, and I think that this is common with women who are better at multitasking than men, I think.
Right.
She needs to have something on, whether it's music or oftentimes it's a TV show, in order to get anything done.
Okay.
And I cannot have anything going on if I'm trying to get something done.
Will she have two things on, like a song, like a CD
and
a film?
Oh,
that's me.
She can do
Lynn,
that.
Lynn cannot do that. I can.
Sort of. Never in any universe can I ever do that.
Okay.
I can't handle it.
Can you listen to an album and a podcast at the same time?
God, no. What? How could you do that? How could you do that? How would you? Look, if I'm going to listen to something, I'm going to listen to something.
Wow, listen to this one. He gave me a stern hand right there. for those who can hear the hand.
I can't even. If I'm listening to a podcast, I have to be. That has to be the only thing I'm doing. Now, I can, like, say, do yard work while I'm listening to a podcast or drive while I'm listening to a
okay.
podcast. You know, something menial, but where my sort of intellectual brain can pay attention to what's on the podcast. But I can't, like, be perusing Facebook or doing something else online while trying to pay attention to a podcast.
Oh, I can't. Well, if especially with sports, a sports podcast that I listen to, and, yeah, there's a wrestling podcast I listen to.
That's fine.
Okay, but I'll have an album on there, if especially if it's something that I think may or may not make the other show. I will put something on, and if it sounds cool, I'm like, okay, I got to make a note of that and then listen to it while I'm in the car.
Now, what's in the foreground? Okay, the podcast is in the foreground, right? And then the album is
in the background. And if there's something, like I said, if it's something that I'm... So this is... Welcome to How the Sausage is Made here at WFYI. So I get a lot of music still sent to me in disc form, and I will listen to them quite often at work, quite often at home, in my kitchen, and cooking, because that's what y'all are doing, I think, and in my car.
Sure.
So if I got a stack of stuff, I mean a lot, and I look at something that I don't know the artist or I don't know if it's going to be particularly great, I will put it on, and if while I'm listening to something or if I'm here, and if a song catches my interest, I'll make a note of it, and then I'll listen to it in the car.
There you go.
And then if it's good, and then it more likely it'll make it onto the house party. So that's kind of where we're at there. So
it's important to listen to music in the car.
Yes.
Especially if you're making music and recording music, because that's the car test. Yep. That's, you go out there and
that scene in Once, where the band goes into the car to do the car test. I was so happy that somebody finally showed that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I absolutely do that. Shifting gears a little bit, you're hanging out with Matt Pelser and Matt Soucy here at Film Sociology. He is the new guest host of All In, capital I, capital N. You could hear the intensity of the all caps. But that's Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1, soon to be 5 days a week, where we will cover a myriad of topics. It'll be fun. You'll enjoy. And calls, your calls, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, actually, you know what?
Do we have calls?
We're planning on not taking live calls.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I take that back.
It's kind of the 1A model. So we're basing this on 1A in that there's a lot of, there's no shortage of people who call into radio shows just to hear themselves on the radio.
Yes.
And so that's what we're trying to mitigate. However, 1A does break that every once in a while if they've got someone with a particularly unique or valuable perspective, where they'll take a live call in that way, or sometimes they'll have guests via phone.
Sure.
So we're planning on doing that where that's concerned. But yeah.
Okay.
Just to clarify.
Right. No worries. I do want to go through some listings a little bit. However, on last week's show, I was a little fast in doing a tribute to actor Rip Torn, who passed away, because there are times where I just kind of rattled through the IMDb list and I missed a few titles, and I was caught. This was brought to my attention. Now, I had mentioned one of the things that I always remember the most from him was the film Heartland with him and Conchita Farrell, where they give birth to a calf. I think we should mention the Man Who Fell to Earth, Nicholas Roeg film with David Bowie. Maidstone, that's the film where he attacked Norman Mailer with a hammer.
Yes.
So you should check that out. And
For real, too.
Yes,
right?
For real. This was Norman Mailer wanted to make a film that blurred the line between fantasy and reality. So he hired some actors and non-actors. And Torn's character was supposed to attack Mailer's character with a hammer. He was told to surprise him. Torn may or may not have had a substance thing going at this particular time, but it's captured on film, and it's kind of cinematic.
It upset the kids who were present.
Mailer's wife and family who were there at the time. So, yeah. So anyway, that's there. He's also Albert Brooks's lawyer in Defending Your Life, and way overqualified and actually put in way too much of an effort to play the father in Freddy Got Fingered.
Okay, I was wondering if you were going to bring up Freddy Got Fingered.
I did not, and I know I had people call me out on that, and he's way too qualified to be in that film and putting way too much effort to be in a Tom Green film.
It made me a little sad when we got the scene where he was drunk and got, well, I can't really say it here, or probably shouldn't say
Thank
it
you.
Here. But you know what I'm talking
yep.
about. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, Rip Torn, why? Why?
Because they paid him.
And I'm even probably less, I'm more hesitant to even admit that I've seen that movie in the first place.
No, I had to review it. So
well, yeah, you had to review it, but I didn't have to watch it. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. So anyway, thank you, Rip. However, I do want to mention, as I mentioned before, the Indie Shorts event is happening the 25th through the 28th at Newfields. This weekend, they are wrapping up the Summer Nights film series. They are wrapping up the Harry Potter week. Friday the 19th and Saturday the 20th, Deathly Hallows, Parts 1 and 2, because you couldn't make a three-hour film out of that book. Nah, couldn't have done that. Avengers said you could, basically. So I'm still upset about that. It's been 8 years.
You think they could have pulled three movies out of that book?
No, they could have made a single three-hour film.
Yeah.
One book, one film. Sorry.
No, you know what?
That way with Hunger Games. You know what? There is no Hamlet part. Well, there is a Hamlet part two, but it's Steve Coogan. It's not... You know, it's not that. So
I'm glad we're in agreement on that, because it's just a money grab, really.
Yeah, because after Avengers Endgame, and by the way, Avenger, you could have made a three-hour film three films ago. So anyway, I'm sorry. Get off my lawn. Here's an interesting one. And one of these days, I'm actually going to revisit this. It's quite the weekend at Keystone Arts on Friday and Saturday at midnight, and at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin Friday at 2. Well, it's already happened, I'm sure. Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 2 and 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 2 p.m. Both places are showing Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, a midnight movie of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and other times, of course.
And other times at the Historic Art Craft Theater. And I need to revisit that film because I always, every time this title brings up, am I at the age now where I think Ferris Bueller is a bag?
You know what? There is a
faction of that.
There are times when you can revisit a movie for the new perspective, and if the characters you can sympathize more or less. I think that that's so valuable to watch a movie over and over and over again. My dad is one of those people who at least my perspective of him anyway, that, oh, I've seen that one. I don't need to see that one again.
Yeah, you do.
But you really do. You really need to, because your perspective changes.
Yep.
You know, you notice more things. You know, when I was... We brought up Raiders of the Lost Ark. Anytime they're anywhere but running from something that's chasing them, I didn't care when I was a kid. Like, I don't care what's happening at the university. I don't care what's happening at his house when they're meeting. I'm not listening. I'm not. I want to see the boulder chasing him. I want to see the snakes. I want to see the blood. I want to see the heart coming out. You know, that's a different movie. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha.
I when I was a kid, I wanted action. But now as an adult, I notice all the other stuff, and that's why you need to see movies more than once.
Well, I always use the rule of The Big Chill should be watched every 5 years.
Okay, yeah.
Because the film doesn't get any older, we do. And so life experiences and life happenings change over time and hopefully change your perspective on that. So anyway, that is happening at both those places. Also at at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin on July 23rd, yes, Tuesday, 10 a.m., Kung Fu Panda, the original. Don't need four of them. First one's fine. July 26th and 27th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., this is Spinal Tap.
Ooh.
Gotta see that on the big screen. July 30th, Tuesday at 10 a.m., oh my gosh, I remember this from HBO, the Looney Bugs Bunny movie, where it's kind of a compilation of Warner Brothers shorts, cartoons put together, if I remember right. August 2nd and 3rd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Remember the Titans. August 9th, 7:30, Friday, Mamma Mia. 7:30, Saturday, August 10th, the original Austin Powers. Friday and Saturday, August 16th and 17th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Searchers. Great. Oh, I'd love to see that on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday, August 23rd at 7:30 p.m., The Seven Samurai.
All right.
And then 2 o'clock, August 24th, Saturday, August 24th, Spirited Away. So that's a lot happening there. Wrapping up at Keystone Arts. And by the way, it was good seeing everybody last week at The Room.
Oh, I still haven't been to a Room midnight showing.
I went both nights. I haven't done two in a while. I was useless on Sunday the 14th, and my family knew it. So, as I mentioned, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is this weekend. Next weekend is Jurassic Park, 26th, 27th. August 2nd and 3rd, Princess Mononoke. August 9th and 10th, Donnie Darko. August 16th and 17th, Eraserhead. And August, hold on. And August 23rd and 24th, Pulp Fiction.
All right.
At Keystone Arts. I worked at a crummy video store in Carroll Springs, Illinois. And I didn't want to watch the new titles because I was getting paid not that much. So I would find movies that I have not seen, or as I called them, the center of the video store picks. And my boss always wondered why. And eventually, about a month or so into it, I found a tape that was chewed up. And I said to my boss, this is why. This was my front of, you know, got to check the conditions of the old titles. And I was really good with the pause button. I had a pretty good trigger with the pause button, except for the one time The Birth of the Maggot was happening in Eraserhead and mom and daughter showed up at the store.
Oh,
so,
no.
And I think there was a mommy, what's that? And I think I even blurted out nothing. So anyway, that's at Keystone Arts there. Here's one. When was the last time you were at a drive-in?
Oh, drive-in. It was years ago. It was the Bel Air in Ripley County, Indiana, near Versailles State Park. That was where we always went to drive-ins as a kid, and we only went maybe a half dozen times. That had to have been the last one I went to.
Okay, all right.
I can't remember when or what we saw, but yeah, that was it.
Still working on that experience with the Sosie household, but although Emma did have a driving experience with her friend earlier this summer, so that's better late than ever on that. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, screen one, we have Lion King and Aladdin, sure. Screen two, Toy Story 4 and Lion King.
Wow.
Sure. Screen three, Crawl and Annabelle Goes Home. Sure. Oh, man. And screen four, Spider-Man Far From Home and Stuber. Yeah.
All right.
That's happening over there, over at the Skyline in Shelbyville.
You got to go mass appeal for drive-ins, you know?
I know. Abdul Kim Shabazz and I have always talked about we wanted the Art House drive-in. We're watching Bergman and Fellini. You know, we'll have dozens of happy customers.
per year.
Per season, yeah. Over at the Skyline, you have The Lion King and Toy Story 4. And at the Hummel, Lion King and Aladdin and a coming soon on screen 2. They're not telling you what it is, so that is happening there. New Blu-ray titles and old Blu-ray titles on Blu-ray this week. DC has been in need of light fare, and they kind of served that a little bit with Aquaman, and I think they hit it on the head with Shazam.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's a superhero version of Big, and yeah. It's still a little too long and a little too fighty near the last third. And it's fun because it's set during Christmas season. I think they were trying to set it for a December release and then just delayed it. You know, and your lead is good. My daughter likes the lead. And it's light enough and silly enough, and it's not Batman versus Superman. So mission accomplished. Way to go. That's out there. It's on video now. There are a couple of titles that I recently caught up with, both of which I had not seen, but it's amazing what I will watch when sent to me. It was a TV film. I forgot it was a TV film, but there's a film that's listed as Anne Rule Presents The Stranger Beside Me, The Ted Bundy Story.
Oh.
So this is not the one with Mark Harmon.
Different one.
This is the one with Billy Campbell, for you fans of, was it Now and Then?
Yeah.
I believe. And The Rocketeer has been a few years after The Rocketeer. And Barbara Hershey is in this as well, Kevin Dunn. She plays Anne Rule. It goes into the Ted Bundy case, but also the relationship that that Anne, the writer, had with Ted. So that blends in with the kind of unpleasantness of a TV movie about a serial killer.
There's so much Ted Bundy stuff nowadays. What is it?
It's fascination, apparently. So the relationship between Hershey's character and Campbell's character of Bundy is more interesting, and it's otherwise it's kind of unfortunately familiar territory that we've been down. Now Matt, you are slightly younger than I am. And I'm going to ask you, are you familiar with the films of Andy Sedaris?
No.
Andy Sedaris, I've wound up seeing a few of his films here. Best known for me, the two early films from the 80s, Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Oh, no, I've seen that one.
And Malibu Express.
I've seen Hard Ticket.
Yes, that's Andy Sedaris. The film that, you know, we'll let you know how many playmates are involved in the film. And I believe it's Bombs, Babes, and something else. There's some form of that. So, you know, it's about government agents, and no government agents looks like any of these people in this. Brassieres are not really required. Shirts for men are optional, and buttons not necessary for anybody.
Yeah,
in
do
this.
Not use all of the buttons.
Right, exactly. So this is one where the two two blonde government agents who have been in other films are on an abandoned deserted island. Unbeknownst to them, they're also on with a surviving Japanese soldier from World War II, and there's gold involved and different factions and bad guys, and it's so ridiculous. So this is a film you would watch if your family was gone.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. There's, I believe, yeah, the lead, I believe, is a soap actor who got something else to do, and yeah. But I got to revisit Savage Beach. So if you like that stuff, I would say have a few cocktails and some loaded nachos and go check that out, because it's now out on Blu-ray thanks to Mill Creek Entertainment.
Thank you, Mill Creek.
But yeah, I remember seeing Malibu Express and Hard Ticket to Hawaii on HBO. And it was on a lot. And
really?
Oh, yeah.
They put it on a lot?
Or we just rented it a lot because, you know, we were teenagers in the 80s. And, well, look at that. So,
yeah.
So, and I'm sure more titles are coming because he's got about 12 films and I've already watched 4 of them. So, anyway, all of that is out on DVD and Blu-ray, my God.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. That's all right. Matt Pelzer's hanging out with me, the host of All In, which you can hear Tuesdays and Thursdays and eventually every day at 1 here on WFYI. Now, remind me again where you grew up.
Southeastern Indiana, Sunman officially, but so the way I sort of explain it to people who aren't familiar with the area is the sort of triangle between Brookville, Batesville, and Lawrenceburg. That was my That was my stomping ground.
What was your local movie house? Do you remember?
Oh, the Gibson in Batesville.
Yeah?
Yeah, that was where I saw everything.
Including?
And the Brookville Theater as well, which is still, I mean, both of those theaters are still going and show, you know, the best stuff all the time.
Single screens.
Single screen.
In small town USA.
Yeah, and the Brookville Theater is really under a great revitalization. I'm not as familiar with the status of the Gibson in Batesville, but the Brookville Theater is really nice.
I've driven past it a few times. I still mean to get in there one of these days because I know it's a twofer, so that would be good.
Yeah.
What do you remember going to by yourself? Was this something you could ride your bike to?
No.
Okay.
No.
Ooh, okay.
We lived about 20 minutes away from Brookville and about 15 minutes away from Batesville. Drive.
Okay.
But so yeah, I never rode my bike.
What do you remember watching as a lad?
I remember seeing Jurassic Park at the Gibson in Batesville. We sat in the very front because we thought it would be cool.
And how's your neck?
We learned the lesson that day. But yeah, we went with my buddy's parents, and we said, we're going to sit all the way up front, the movie about dinosaurs. And they said, all right, well, have fun. And so we went up there. And it wasn't as fun, but we still got the gist of the movie.
I got your age range now a little bit because
yeah.
I graduated from college when Jurassic World came out. When Jurassic Park came out, sorry.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how old I was. I had to have been, 93,
yeah.
So it was 90, so I was like 10.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
thanks a lot. That's fine. Do you remember the first R-rated movie you got to go see?
Ooh, Con Air. It was Con Air.
That was rated R, wasn't
it? Rated R. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I remember loving it. I still kind of love that movie. Whenever I want to go back and just watch a mindless, ridiculous Nicolas Cage
with
movie.
Hair. Well, bad, yeah. Bad hair.
Bad hair, yeah.
Yeah. What was there something that you could or couldn't watch with your folks, or was there a film that you were embarrassed that you watched with your folks?
Oh, yeah. So here's an embarrassing moment.
Oh, please.
When this was in
Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Sort of. This was in that sort of awkward period just before you know you've hit puberty. Okay.
Okay.
Just before you know that everything's changing, and so at this point I didn't really know what was going on. I just knew that I liked what Meg Ryan had to do in When Harry Met Sally. I just knew I liked that scene in the restaurant. I didn't know why. I just knew that I loved it. Okay. And so I told my here's the thing. I told my parents. I said, let me know when the restaurant scene comes on because I wanted to watch it. And my dad
with them.
Oh, I didn't know. And so my dad said, Matt, the restaurant scene's on. And so I came in and I watched it with my parents, and that was it.
Wow.
And I liked it. I didn't know why. And I learned a few months later exactly why.
When did your mom tell you that?
That's the thing, is my parents never really had to have the talk with me.
No, they showed you the deli scene.
Because my grandma... No, because my grandma had these animated home videos called "Where Did I Come From?"
The Shel Silver. Oh,
and
those.
What's Happening to Me?
What's Happening to Me? Yes.
Yeah. And so I watched
those. Still available?
That was the talk. I don't know if they're still available.
Oh
but.
My gosh, I had the book version of those.
Oh yeah, she had that too.
Yeah. No, I'd rather watch Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Wow.
I don't know if they hold up. I haven't been back.
I'm going to say I'm not sure. So I am strongly saying I don't know.
I'm sure you can get them somewhere.
Yeah, probably somewhere. God, yeah. Let's see. Emma is now 17. Mm. And it was interesting because earlier this year, she revisited Mad Men. Mad Men was the first grown-up series she latched on to. She was 12, and it was the costumes and the set design. She liked John Hamm.
Of course.
And I'm not allowed to talk about Joan ever. but and so she got some of it there, but she revisited. She binge-watched the series this past spring. And picked up a little more on some of the subtle nuances of
rewatch
sexual politics and things that happened in the 60s. So
change of perspective.
Yeah, a little change of perspective there. I don't think I ever had that issue with my folks. I don't think I was ever caught. Was I caught? No. I was informed by Emma she was not going to watch Chicago with me because she knew Catherine Zeta-Jones was in it and I was going to make noises about it. So even though I'd shown her other Bob Fosse films, she was not watching Chicago with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so there was that. And so growing up, did you have on Cincinnati television, did you have your horror show host?
Oh, you know what? I'm sure we did, but I never watched. The closest I came to horror growing up was I never missed X-Files.
Really?
That was it. I didn't watch horror movies on TV. And you know what? I've never really been a big horror person. It's not okay. That I dislike it. I just don't gravitate toward it the way some people do.
But I think also, with the exception of people like Sammy Terry and Svengoolie, that kind of, I know every city had their own host. I will have to check and see what Cincy's was before your time, I'm sure.
It may have been one of those like local radio personality hosted things, Saturday Night Movie.
Same dude that hosted like, the kids show or the talk show. One and the same, all of that, yeah. So,
may have been that kind of thing, but I don't really know.
That's okay. I also wanted to be interrogated by Agent Scully, so.
Oh,
Yeah.
Any excuse. Any excuse. I'll do anything. I'll befriend aliens. I don't care.
So long as Agent Scully
comes. As long as Agent Scully is there. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Hi, welcome to Drooling Husbands here on Film Sociology. Cool. Well, very good. Of course, anytime you need a film guest, you know where to find me.
Oh, absolutely. we're not going to be hurting for that.
Yeah, I figured not. Anyway, so, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Matt, for more information about the show and for you, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Matt Pelsor, MattPelsor. And you can follow All In on Twitter at All In Indiana. I believe we've also got a landing page at WFYI.org, which is easy to find.
And if you have any suggestions for proper studio porn, there's a difference.
Oh, yeah.
So I guess you mentioned 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yeah.
I mentioned Echo from the Canyon. Have you seen Muscle Shoals?
Yes, I have. And that one's a good one, too, for that.
Very good. There's one about Stax that I know, I believe PBS put out.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. What else is there?
And actually, it's funny you mentioned the Muscle Shoals one because there is a subreddit called Microphones where it's just microphone talk. Mostly it's people needing recommendations for studio microphones that they want to buy for their project studio or whatever. But there was a thread on there one time that I actually helped out with where they took all these pictures from Muscle Shoals, the documentary, and they were like, identify these microphones. And I knew all of them.
Really?
But maybe one or two. That shows you the level of obsession.
No, it's okay. I'm sure there are websites devoted to this. Just like if there's a website devoted to any film that has a marquee in the background,
yeah,
and you see what the movies are in the background, especially if they are affiliated with said studio or not. And I'll and there's a couple examples I'll give. in the 1973 film White Lightning, the great Burt Reynolds movie, the first Gator McCluskey film, there's a car chase through small town Southern America, and he does a, well, not he, probably Hal Needham, does the turn, you know, the skidding turn and corners and goes in through another corner, and there's a movie theater, and they're showing Skyjacked, which was a low, well, cheaper than Airport hijack movie on a plane with Charlton Heston, but it was the same studio. So something like that.
Of course.
When during the bank robbery scene in Dirty Harry, you know, the very first one with the car flipping over and it hits the fire hydrant. If you look in the background, the theater marquee is "Play Misty for Me." The film that Eastwood had made his directorial debut on earlier that year.
Perfect.
Not the same studio, but, you know, you kind of get the inside joke. Yeah. Things like that. So I remember at the beginning of the original Shaft, you can see the Scalp Hunters, the Burt Lancaster, Ozzie Davis film. Now, of course, if you see any movie marquees in New York in the 60s and 70s, you're on your own. So take caution on those.
Yeah. Don't seek those out.
But I'm sure there's a website devoted to microphones and famous recording performances.
Absolutely. And you know who else geeks out with me over that is Don Hipschweiler, host of Morning Edition.
I've come in the morning and Don will be watching something fascinating. And he eventually will ask me and he will eventually ask you about this or that. And between the three of us, this would have been a show on HD2 about 15 years ago.
I also collect vintage microphones, and Don gave me the best one I have.
Really?
He had this old ribbon microphone that he used in his play radio station as a kid.
Oh, my gosh.
Because his dad was the local TV repairman, and so he had a lot of equipment. And so his dad built him this play radio station that would broadcast at like 5 watts on AM in his basement. And this microphone that he used was an old Electro Voice V1, which is an old ribbon mic. It looks a lot like one of the RCA mics.
Yeah.
You know, you recognize it immediately. But anyway, he found it in his closet, and he didn't really want it anymore, and he knew I collected vintage microphones, so he gave it to me.
Man.
And it still works. You can plug it in, and you still get signal. It doesn't sound great. It needs some work, but it still works.
We all do.
I couldn't be more thankful to Don for that.
Don is a treasure, and we're very lucky to have him. I'd love to have him on, but he's out of here by 11 a.m.
Yeah.
And for good reason.
Yeah,
so.
He gets here a little early. A
little bit. When I post on social media, I'm in for a day of public radio goodness, and I think I'm hot stuff because I write it. 7 or 6:30. He and Taylor have been here for a while.
He's already
been here. Wow. Oh, the other one I should mention, and it should be out on video soon, is the Aretha Franklin documentary Amazing Grace.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm hoping Criterion will finally put that out on home video. And speaking of which, if you're listening, Criterion, I already tweeted you that my wish list is several minutes in the Criterion closet of old titles. So, you know, my 50th is in December. Just putting it out there. Anyway, yeah. So for next week, and what are some of the topics coming up on some future all-ins?
So one of the ones that I'm really looking forward to is a really good discussion on. So there's this salmon farm in Indiana that has cropped up. And there's a lot of reporting on it because it's essentially genetically modified organism. It's a genetically modified salmon species that are being raised. I mean, we're raising salmon in Indiana, so they have to be genetically modified in some way,
right.
You know what I mean? But there's a lot of misinformation on GMOs out there, and there are a lot of weird reasons, perhaps misinformed reasons, that people won't consume them. And we just want a frank discussion on that and maybe how we got to that point. So we're going to talk with reporter Samantha Horton. We're going to bring hopefully a nutritionist on to talk about the nutritional difference between consuming GMOs and non-GMOs and things like that. And
should I bring my dry rub?
Yeah. Hey, look, if they bring the fish, yes. Yes, because I'll eat it.
That's a subtle hint here at NPR. Anyway, so what else is coming up?
What I want to do, and if it were left up to me, it would be a bad idea, because I want to do a lot of fun shows, okay? I'm under a directive from, like, our managing editor and IPB News to do some hard news stuff.
Of course.
And that's fine. We're going to do that, absolutely. But in the summertime, when we get to have a little fun, when there aren't as many people listening, we're going to do fun shows. So I want to, what part of, one of my weird hobbies is I'm also a cave explorer. So I go crawling through the caves of southern Indiana as often as I can, which is not nearly as often as I'd like
to. You're a tall dude, too.
I know. The biggest problem I have is the length of my femur. I get stuck in squeezes, and I can't turn my leg the right way to get through them. So I want to have a show. I want to do a show about the caves of Indiana. And there is actually a bit of a sordid history surrounding caving in Indiana, around one cave in particular. And so if we get to do the show, you'll get to hear about that then. But that's a show I'd like to do.
Actually, are you familiar with the Werner Herzog documentary Cave of Forgotten Dreams?
Love it. And I love his voice.
Well, yeah, I want Werner Herzog to do Pledge Spots. Yeah, I have put this request out many times. I've not heard a response. It's okay. Not even an imitation of Herzog. Actually, Herzog himself. He might. Well, if he would do the Penguins of Madagascar movie, I'm sure he would do NPR Pledge Spots. So, I remember taking Lynn and Emma because I had shown Emma some Herzog. I'm obsessed with Herzog.
Are
I love Herzog. I have the Herzog box set.
Nice.
I have most of the films he's done, because my introduction to Emma, and take note on this, somebody had done on YouTube Werner Herzog reading Madeline and Curious George and Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel. And it's, you know, just the kind of deep, dark, at times morose style. And then, yeah, he popped up. But I showed Emma Encounters at the End of the World, about his North Pole one, which she really liked, and Grizzly Man that she really liked. Well, I dragged my family to the 3D version, and it's a...
I was going to ask if you had the glasses.
Worth seeing in 3D. We were off the 3D a little bit, and that's really okay. There was usually one film a year that was worth watching in 3D. That was it. And
I hate 3D, but for that one, I think it was worth
it.
I
would say that. Scorsese's Hugo. If you have actual filmmakers who know how to make a movie and make it with 3D, that's fine. But most of the time, I don't need it. And, yeah, this includes James Cameron. Avatar looked great, but whatever. But no, I love seeing it in 3D. My wife described it as cave drawings and Hearts of Space music, which it kind of
really
was, but I didn't mind. So, but yeah, we actually saw that in the theater and absolutely loved it.
I thought the larger point that he was making about how you are essentially seeing the birth of the human soul.
Yes.
When you look at these things and you see, you know, 36,000 years ago, and you see that either the Neanderthal, which I think were the ones who made these drawings, had this sort of level of creativity to where they could put this to whatever medium it was, in this case limestone. I think it's amazing to look at that sort of anthropological view of it, I suppose.
For those who don't know, it's in the south of France. It was discovered at least 10,000-20,000, basically the oldest cave drawings on the planet.
Yeah, known at the time. There have been older ones found.
And the French government allotted, I think, an hour and a half for Herzog and a bare bones film crew to go in. You can't go in this. You to go in and carefully film it. And that's basically it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the setup at the beginning and then the aftermath at the end. But if you're into visual marvel, that's this film. Help me on my campaign, because if you think Ira Glass guilting you out for Pledge Spots is bad or Alec Baldwin, I really want Herzog to do it. So anyway, I think some fun all ins. The other time to think about is not, you know, the off season, you know, when it's near a holiday week, you know, or near the holiday season, or yeah, end of the summer, if there's a news dry spell, aftermath of election time,
mm-hmm.
you might need a mint. You might need a palate cleanser.
Yeah.
So, I hope you get to do some fun stuff on top of the heavy stuff.
Rare plants in Indiana. There's actually a well that you could tap there of rare plants in Indiana that we can talk about.
And you can't make CBD oils out of that. So.
No, you can't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are plants in Indiana you can't find anywhere else on the planet. It's amazing.
Check that out, huh?
Yeah. I know it sounds boring, but we'll make it interesting.
No, they will. So, Matt, thanks for hanging out with me.
Thank you, Matt.
That's Matt Pelzer, the host of All In, which you can hear Tuesdays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock here on WFYI. It will eventually go to 5 days a week, so go check that out. All right, I'm breaking old film sociology format a little bit. Yeah, I already said words to live by minutes ago, but we got an encore. Just a friendly note, July 23rd and 24th, Restaurant Impossible will be coming to Muncie. They're going to be working on a restaurant up there. There is a Facebook page looking for volunteers. So go to Restaurant Impossible Muncie on Facebook, and if you can volunteer either on the 23rd or the 24th, do so. It's as somebody who's done that, has been an extra and been a volunteer at some fun stuff, and a great excuse to go all the way back to the very first chat I had with Chef Robert Irvine from December of 2010. He is currently filming the new season of Restaurant Impossible, and this is where the chat began, and a friendship blossomed, and an annual guest. So hopefully I will get him on as a new guest, or his annual visit, hopefully later this year. But for now, from December of 2010, my chat with Robert Irvine. Enjoy. Joining me on Film Sociology is a chef, television personality, and a gentleman who can crack walnuts with his biceps, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And yourself?
Hanging in there. Not as much snow as you guys, but we're doing okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, at least we didn't get, well, where I am in Hilton Head, there's not much. It did snow, but when I was in New York, I think we got like 8 inches, 12 inches to a drifts of 8 foot and crazy stuff.
Indeed. Well, this is a busy month for you because you have not one but two television programs that you're involved with. Let's start with Worst Cooks in America. Did you watch the first season, and did you know how far ahead did you know that you were going to be involved with the show?
Well, funny enough, about a year prior to the season one, we talked about it, and it never happened for me based on other things that were going on. And I saw season one and loved it because it's real, you know. Mm-hmm. And when they asked me to do season two, I was obviously very excited because I'd never done something where you're training people one-on-one except in my restaurants or in the Navy. So I was very excited to do it and to work with Anne Burrell.
It seemed like you were the right choice. Funny you bring that up because watching you on Dinner Impossible, you've had people help you that – well, they're not always the sharpest knife in the drawer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dinner Impossible is so real, and it's so, you know, and I always say it's the most real reality show on television because I really know nothing, and I find people who want to work with me, or they don't, whichever the case may be, and I sort of bring them in. And if they've never picked up a knife before, I expect great things from them, and I push them. And you can see that on Dinner Impossible when they get annoyed with me or they get upset with me. But, you know, we've got a job to do in a very short period of time to get it done, and there's no time for excuses or attitudes. We just get it done.
How's it been working with Chef Anne, and how much did you know her before getting involved with the show?
I didn't know Anne very well because, you know, I do my own thing around the country. Anne's show is set in a studio, and they tape all year. For me, I travel the country, so I didn't know Anne very well, only from the season one. And to work with her, she's a very intense person. She was a great tutor. You know, she was a culinary instructor before she became a chef. Mm-hmm. And she's very intense. You know, you think I'm the tough guy. In fact, I think she's tougher than me. I'm looking like the pussycat here, and she's like the ogre. But a fun, fun-loving person. And when you see the show, you'll know that we banter back and forth. She doesn't like to lose. She doesn't like to lose anything. She doesn't like, you know, she's a New York, what's the word I look for? One word, snap you in half person. She can stop a man in his tracks by saying one thing. And it's funny because as a gentleman that I am, I will never argue with a woman. So it's very, very interesting to see the dynamic between Anne and myself.
Did you have a strategy going in on how to work with these people?
Strategy, no. I just, you know, my military training is all about leadership. And what I wanted to do with, of course, Anne picked my team and I picked her team.
Right.
So what I wanted to do was be hard or firm, but nurturing at the same time. And that's very unusual for me from a DI standpoint, a Dinner Impossible standpoint. But I really had to understand each individual person and where they come from and their life and all them things that I don't really get into on Dinner Impossible. And then I could break them down one by one and say, okay, she's got this strength, he's got this strength. And just be firm and sort of, you know, hey, I'm your friend, but I'm also your teacher. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get this right or you don't do your homework, you're going to be going home. So strategy was always to win and be the better teacher.
What was the oddest thing you've had to eat with the show?
The oddest thing I had to eat? Oh, my word. There were so many things. Burnt chicken, shepherd's pie.
Uh-oh.
Which somebody brought in, which is one of my favorite dishes, and I couldn't eat it. It was so bad. Chicken that had been cooked for 19 hours. Meatballs that were made with Twizzlers. Just some horrific stuff. And these people thought it was great.
Now, after this, do you go home and make it just to make things right?
Make things right. food is supposed to be fun, and you're allowed to make mistakes. But there are a few basic things you need to follow, you know. And I think after this 8-week period of doing with cooks, these people that were either on at the end of the show or got let go early, they all learned something to go home and continue to cook. And I think all of them, all 16 of them, are still continuing to cook. I still talk to some of them, Facebook and whatnot. And they found a new love. It's not out of a frozen container or a can. So I'm excited that they've gone on and done that.
Excellent. Now, I know, as you alluded to, you have a show coming up called Restaurant Impossible. What happened with the changing from one format to another?
It's very different. You know, Restaurant Impossible is almost like Dinner Impossible times 3. Because I'm calm. I have to learn about the property that's going bankrupt. You know, the basic outline of the show is there's a bankrupt restaurant or about to go bankrupt. I have 36 hours or 2 days to turn it around, $10,000 to make it look new, remarket it, retrain the people, cooks and front of the house, re-put a new menu. And all this is done after I meet the owners, and then I ban the owners from the actual restaurant. So they never see the restaurant again or what I'm going to do to it until we reopen it 36 hours later. And normally to 200 or 300 reservations with a new menu, a new look, decor, new menus, new everything. So it's unlike Dinner Impossible or Worst Cooks. If somebody on Dinner Impossible, if I fail, you know, there's no real sort of after effects except my ego. Worst Cooks, somebody goes home. But restaurant is somebody's life and livelihood. Mm-hmm. You know, do you lose your restaurant? You lose all the money you put into it. And when you see these shows that we've just shot, I mean, 2 30-year-old kids putting $1 million into a restaurant and running a 50% food cost and payroll, $1 million. You know, these are people's lives. So you get all them emotions of happiness, frustration, anger. When I first meet them, they're, oh, we're doing everything right. Well, no, you're not, because you're going bankrupt. So it's, you know, the first 8 hours, they want to fight you and they want to argue with you. And then once you see that I'm trying to help them and teach their staff, then it suddenly I become their friend. Mm-hmm. You know, their staff always want to fight you and they're doing everything perfect. But when I show them what they're doing wrong and then how to fix that, it's amazing the transformation of their attitude.
How much downtime did you get between restaurants when you were filming that?
Not very much, about a week between each restaurant. And we were in Delaware, St. Louis, North Carolina, New Jersey. I mean, it's a hectic schedule because this year, obviously, I've done an awful lot of filming. We finished filming Dinner Impossible in June. I went straight into 8 weeks of filming in New York with Worst Cooks and straight from that into restaurants. Mm-hmm. And in between, we shot Iron Chef and Celebrity Chop. And a lot of other shows that are airing are coming up soon.
Mm-hmm. Was there a recurring theme as to what was wrong with the restaurants that you took care of?
Yeah, I think everybody believes that, you know, they can run a restaurant and run a restaurant well, even if they've had no experience. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't run kitchens well. they don't market correctly. They don't, you know, a restaurant has to be revamped every 3 years, whether it be decor, menus. I change my menu in my restaurant every 5 weeks. So you've got to keep it fresh and keep people coming back. And you know, one of the restaurants we did in Mystic, Connecticut, I mean, the carpet had probably been down there like 40 years.
Oh.
You know, and it was old and outdated, and the menu was old and outdated, and they forget to change with the times.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, new restaurants open in the vicinity of these places, and they've got exciting food, they've got vibrant drinks, they've got, you know, light music, and they're taking all that, them type of businesses away. So it's just interesting to see that everybody has the same format, different places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't scream and shout and say, you suck and you do this. That's not what this is. I go in, I evaluate based on what I see and what I think this place should be and the surrounding area. I say, okay, this is what I think, and being a designer. I say, okay, this is what I want for this restaurant. How do you make this happen? We've got $10,000, we've got no sleep, and in 36 hours, we open this restaurant. Now I've got to market this, put it on radio stations, which I do because I love radio. It hits so many people so fast, and you get the word out so quickly. So we do a lot of radio stuff, a lot of chamber of commerce things to try and get the word out about this restaurant that people wouldn't normally know about. So it's really life-saving of not only health, but revamping their life, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is very meaningful to me.
When you
very different side of Robert Irvine.
Well, I mean, I think from the first impressions, especially with the beginning of Dinner Impossible, we see the aggressive, you know, forward moving, and but seeing you work, like I remember, my daughter has the DVD of you cooking with kids on the Ratatouille DVD, and you know, working on Battle Sugar, which is now apparently a holiday tradition on Food Network.
Yes, that was an amazing show. I mean, that show, if you think about it, was shot 3 years ago. And it's still one of the most viewed things on YouTube for Food Network, which is hilarious to me because it was such a great show and it's timeless.
Mm-hmm.
The Ratatouille, and that is so funny you just brought it up. I was just talking about that with some friends of mine. You know, we did a, when we put Ratatouille to DVD, John Lasseter and myself and Brad Bird in Los Angeles, we shot, the Food Network shot a thing where I cooked for two brother and sister from New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
and we did crepes, and it was so much fun because I believe that children obviously are a future of culinarians, but also fitness and things like that. You know, I worked out this morning in the gym with every morning like I do, and there was four children there. They couldn't have been more than 8 years old, all doing push-ups and running around. And what a great way, fitness and food. And yes, that's the side of me. You know, I have a dad, and I love kids. And that's the side you don't really see from Dinner Impossible because you see this guy's got to get this mission done,
mm-hmm.
and not fail. And that's unfortunately, some people see that, you know, they're going to the show halfway through, and they're like, oh, he's really aggressive, or he's, you know, until they really understand what the show is.
Mm-hmm.
And you get, it's funny, you get judged on that TV show, which is fine. I'm a very tough person in the kitchen, and I make no mistake and have no apologies for that. But the people I've worked with and turned out and they've gone on to do their things are executive chefs in their own right, and they call me every day or in factory or, you know, say, oh, look at this menu, what do you think? And that to me is amazing that I have that depth. You know, I have 5-year-old children, 9-year-olds. In fact, next week I have 2 cancer children, victims, patients, I should say, not victims, come in to make a wish to cook with me in my restaurant on Hilton Head for a week. You know, and people don't get to see that side of Robert Irvine, and I think Worst Cooks and Restaurant Impossible will show that side of me a little bit.
Well, and, you know, you got a sous chef in Indianapolis waiting for you. She's only 9, but she's willing.
I'm going to tell you, you have to get on a plane. You have to bring her to my restaurant. It would be awesome.
She loves travel. That shouldn't be a problem. Shifting gears for a little bit, when it comes to watching movies, can you watch a film that's set in a restaurant, or is it too grating? Are you taking too many notes?
I love movies. I am a huge movie. You know, in the last month, I've watched Fault, The Town. I just love movies. Red. I get so absorbed into the characters of what goes on, and especially if it's historic or if it's action. I'm a big action guy. Obviously, you know, I'm a guy. But I can watch a movie and not worry about it for 2 hours. In fact, normally what I do is I take two movies back to back, and I say, okay, I'll watch, you know, this one, and we'll come out of the movie theater, get a Coke or something, and then go back and watch the other one. That's my release of stress. Working out as well. I just love movies.
How'd you enjoy Red?
I loved it. A great cast.
Yep.
And one of the things about it, when you get a great bunch of people on a movie, the movie can, you know, the script can be not as strong, but because you enjoy them movies, or them people, you enjoy that movie. I watched that Unstoppable with
Denzel.
Denzel Washington, who was absolutely amazing. And my heart was pounding the whole way through that.
It was.
It was just an awesome movie. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, movies and food are good.
Well, what do you make around the house to snack on when it's movie night at the Irvine House? Stuff that you can't get in the at the movie theaters?
No, I'm a big believer in sweet popcorn, you know, candy popcorn. I love it. I do chocolate raisins. I do... egg sandwiches. I'm a freak. Take poached eggs and make sandwiches out of it, you know.
Uh-huh.
But really just, I don't do soda that much. I do a lot of water and a couple of beers now and again. But I just love to pick a food. Mm-hmm. Popcorn is my absolute favorite. It can't be buttered. I don't like that butter stuff. It's got to be caramel for me. Yeah, and I normally freeze my chocolate. So if I have like Snickers or Twixes or I put them in the freezer for a couple of days, and then I eat them frozen.
Well, did I read right? You grew up in Wiltshire?
Yes.
Wiltshire,
England, yeah.
Wiltshire. What was the name of the movie house in your neighborhood?
We didn't have, there's no name in the movie house. What it is, okay. In Salisbury itself, which is an old war town, you know, it's very historic. It used to be the mayor's house, and they made it into this movie theater that had six movie theaters, you know, in one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Wolfpack. And I used to go there when I was a child, you know, on a Saturday mornings, they would have, like, you know, kids for X amount of pounds, and you could go in and watch movies from 8 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, straight through, they would just keep running movies. You know, so it was a great place, to sit and eat garbage, meet your friends, and watch movies that you were fed up with them, you know?
Do you remember what some of the films were?
Oh, geez. No. I mean, I am so old now. I'm 45 years old now. I was a kid. I was 8 years old.
Yeah, but I remember what I saw when I was 7 and 8.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't remember what I saw last week. That is funny. I mean, I only just watched, and you just heard me. I only just watched Unstoppable and could remember Denzel Washington's name. You know, it's just. Oh, what did I also see? Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie.
The Tourist.
Is it American?
The Tourist.
Tourist. I just watched that too.
You enjoyed that?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. A little slow to start with, but I did enjoy it because I figured it out before, you know, the end.
Right. So
I like it when I figure it out and I'm not stumped.
Well, with your memories, so I'll cross off the History of Hammer Horror and Cliff Richard. Those are out. That's okay.
Cliff Richard, now there's a name from the past.
My daughter loves Summer Holiday. And We have a British telly club here at WFYI, and we showed on a Sunday afternoon, we showed it to members as a, you know, kind of a thank you gift. And my daughter was 4 and she's dancing to Cliff Richard in the back of the auditorium, and I thought, uh-oh. And, of course, you know, she asked if we could buy these, and I went, yeah, sure. So a new generation.
Yeah, on the bus, I remember that,
yep.
Right? They went on a bus.
That's right.
And there's one scene, if I recall right, they were stood on top of a hill.
Yep.
Looking over something.
Well, and the guy who directed that, it was Peter Yates, who would later do Bullet and Breaking Away and do, you know, action films, and Herbert Ross, who's a famous choreographer, did the choreography. I thought it was just going to be 2 hours of twisting at a discotheque, and It was much more than that. So,
well, if you know any of these people, I want to do a movie too. I think I'd be a good action figure. I don't know.
How come you didn't get into the Expendables? Every other guy was. Of course, you're under the ages.
I mean, look at the size of them and who they are. I mean,
just because they're under 60.
Hey, listen, I'm just a cook on the Food Network. Just remember that. But I would love to do a movie. I did a little stint on Drop Dead Diva with Paula Abdul, where I was playing myself in a dream of hers making French fries, but acting to a script. It was kind of funny. But I would love to have a shot at doing a movie.
It's possible.
I don't think I'd be any good at it, but I would love to do it.
Come on,
I can look the part, right?
Oh, absolutely. You got the guns.
Hey, listen, if Dwayne Johnson can do it and Stone Cold Steve Austin and all these guys, I think I can do it.
And you handle wrestlers in the kitchen. We saw that.
Yeah. We had wrestlers in the kitchen. Gail Kim. I had The Miz. Faxino. That was hilarious.
We'll work on that. We'll work, chef by day and crime fighter by night. We'll work on
there
your cape.
There you go. And I can't wait to see Green Hornet. I kind of like that, too.
Cool.
I haven't seen it yet, but I can't wait to see that.
And if you do a buddy cop film with Helen Mirren, I'm there.
Oh, I watched Helen Mirren when I was growing up, and she did Prime Suspect was the name of the show.
Oh, sure.
And I was, mesmerized by this show. And she has always been such an amazing actress in everything she's done, the Green and all that sort of stuff. Just amazing how one person can immerse themselves become that person. I also watched, Facebook or social media.
Oh,
I thought was another great movie.
And has the King's Speech come down to your neck of the woods?
No, not yet.
Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Who's that?
Colin Firth as Colin Firth, Helena Bonham Carter, Jeffrey Rush. It's the King who has the stutter. During beginning of World War II.
Yeah, I know. No, I've seen it.
George VI.
I just haven't. I haven't seen it anywhere around here. But I normally end up in a major city somewhere. That's the fun part.
Well, Chef Irvine, thank you so much for taking time out on Film Sociology. Hopefully, we can get you in Indianapolis sometime. But can't wait to see you on the telly.
Hey, listen, you've got my number. You call me anytime, and don't forget, any action movie you want, I'm in.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad you didn't say other kinds of video nasties or anything like that. The chat that started it all. Robert Irvine is a guest on his first time as a guest on Film Sociology in December of 2010. The restaurant Impossible will be in Muncie on the 23rd and 24th of July. They are looking for volunteers. Go to the Restaurant Impossible Facebook page if you want to sign up and be a volunteer. And tell them Film Sociology sent you. Anyway, go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!